you know, I think a lot of people, they look at the numbers and it's like, hey man, I got to pay this management company, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10% of the rent, and I could do that cheaper. Maybe you can do it cheaper, but also, what is your time worth? Is your time going driving across town to fix a toilet, and you know, is that worth it versus paying somebody else to do it? And you can go and focus on work that's going to make you $500, $1,000, $5,000 an hour, right? So that's, yeah, that's kind of, you need to think about that.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I interview the top commercial real estate investors and industry experts so you can learn from their experiences. So if you're an investor, a high W-2 earner, or real estate or tech sales professional that wants to invest in real estate without having to manage properties or leave your day job, then this podcast is for you. Or if you're already investing in real estate, but you're doing it part-time and you want to become a full-time multifamily or full-time commercial real estate investor, this podcast is for you too. You're going to learn a ton. You will learn from real-life multifamily investors and other professionals in the industry. They're going to share their blueprints for success, and I'm super excited that you're here. So I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello. Abel Pacheco here with the Five Talents Podcast, where we talk about multifamily, commercial real estate investing, path to financial freedom, among other topics. And I'm super excited today. I get to interview Mr. Jens Nielsen, and he's one of those individuals that I remember learning from when I was kind of getting started and kind of heard you on a podcast, Jens. And now, you know, to have you on mine, I'm grateful, I'm humbled, super appreciative, and I look forward to our audience having some exposure to you as well, man.
I appreciate that, Abel. It's fun to connect, and thanks for the call out. You know, it's maybe I should start my own podcast. Like, I've been on so many now, but I haven't taken the leap myself, right?
It's fun. I just started, you know, have our first, I don't know, 10 to 14 conversations out there, so I can really see how the longer term journey of continuing on would be awesome. And I know your questions to other people would be valuable. So if you ever take the leap, let me know. I'll be happy to jump on one of yours. But it's awesome having you, because I almost feel like I know you, like I've had a conversation with you. We have met once or twice here and there, but just the cycles that I've heard you on some other podcasts, you do start to, I know Jens. I know who he is and what he does. But anyways, it's great to have you on, man. So let me, we'll start with an introduction. I'll just kind of, you know, give our listeners and viewers a little bit of Jens's background. I think it's really awesome. So I know you from Denmark, you moved in 96, right? So
that's right.
Wow. What brought you to the US? What was the big change?
It was really just work opportunities back in the, mid 90s there. Actually, I went via London, UK. I left Copenhagen, Denmark at tender age of 24 and then moved to London, England. My English wasn't that awesome, but had to learn quickly. And then on to the US. It was the same company, but it was an American company, and I just got transferred. And so started my life here 24 years ago now. So it's been a while.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's good. We're glad you moved and glad you came over, because you're one of those individuals to learn from now in multifamily. So I know you own like 74 units in New Mexico and Colorado. You're a general partner in addition to that, you're a general partner in 750 syndicated units around the country. So that has a value of like $50 million. And then over the last few years, you've in addition to owning your own, or as you know, owning your own as JV, then syndicating more, you're also a passive investor in like 16 other syndications. So that's another 800 apartment units, 2,000 mobile park lots, and over 6,000 storage units plus. And I think you do also mortgage note funds, private money lending. You're a coach, really passionate, you know, for helping others, enabling others to have success through their strategy, their accountability, personal growth. Man, you are doing some amazing things, man. So let me turn it over to you. Please tell us, you know, more about your story and what you're doing today. Love to hear it.
Oh, thanks, Abel. Yes, I mean, you know, I followed a traditional path. When I came to the U.S., you know, I got my degree and I started working in IT for somebody else because I thought that's what you're supposed to do, right? You know, get your degree, work, and then save in your 401k. And that worked really well for me for years. But over time, I realized, hey, if I ever want to get out of my W-2 job, if I ever want to kind of move to the next level and not be stuck working for somebody else, I had to come up, you know, become an entrepreneur. And I thought about different things, different ways to do it. Nothing really appealed to me until I discovered real estate, you know, and it hasn't been that long. It's only been like 4.5, 5 years since I really got started in it. And, but I just really dug into it and felt like, hey, this is really the path that I was passionate about that I could follow. So I started, just kind of threw myself out there and started buying smaller deals myself, just very early on, just to see how that would look and how to learn from that. So, you know, that was just my initial path into it, was just finding some way to get income and then start buying some smaller units to see how that would work out, right?
So you moved here, 20 years go by, you're in IT, and it wasn't until 4 years later that you really start taking action in the multifamily commercial real estate. Did you buy any single family beforehand, or did you jump straight into commercial?
Straight in, well, I did a small multifamily, so 4 units and below. And, you know, I looked at a couple of single family homes, but I knew I wanted to be an investor. I didn't want to be a property, you know, mom and pop owner, right? And I think there's plenty of people that makes lots of money in single family, nothing against that, but I couldn't really see, man, do I need to buy 100 homes to get a decent income? I wasn't going to do that. So I looked at a few. It's like, no, let me just go to fourplexes. So I bought a couple of 4 units of fourplexes, you know, first, just to see how that would work out. And those are the first, those are the only two kind of smaller deals. And then everything has always been, you know, 10 units and above since then, right?
Yeah, that's a jump. Either way, from not, you know, not buying any, you know, piece of real estate as an investor standpoint to, you know, a duplex, quad, tens, that, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then if you heard, I think something that Jens said that resonates with me is you wanted to be an investor, but you didn't want to manage properties. Like you didn't want to fix toilets or deal with tenants and that kind of stuff, right?
That's right. Yeah. Because I felt like then you end up just being so busy working in your business and you can't really grow beyond that. I must say me and a partner do own a small mobile home park in southwestern Colorado. We were self-managing that one. It's, you know, and it does kind of tend to suck you in at times, but it's relatively low maintenance, so it works out for us. But yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, I think a lot of people, they look at the numbers and it's like, hey, man, I got to pay this management company, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10% of the rent, and I could do that cheaper. Maybe you can do it cheaper, but also what is your time worth? Is your time going, driving across town to fix a toilet and, you know, is that worth it versus paying somebody else to do it? And you can go and focus on work that's going to make you $500, $1,000, $5,000 an hour, right? So that's kind of, you need to think about that.
Yeah. And paradigm, you know, between us both, we were in IT for a number of years. I was in IT for like 13 years as well. You were making some pretty good, you know, change, I would imagine, in your W-2, your profession, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, good money, no question, you know, and bonuses and long-term incentive plans and everything else. But also I started writing on the wall and I didn't want the golden handcuffs to be too tight, right? Because I'm like, man, it just keeps getting more and more difficult to leave every year. And I just didn't want to go down that. And actually just a month ago, I went to part-time in my job. So I did give up some of those golden handcuffs. And I was like, man, this is a time to make the move. So I'm already, you know, I'm close to retiring, if you will. Right. So that's exciting.
No, that's awesome. You have a lot of experience. Wish you lots of success in that journey. And you're going to do amazing, as you have already done amazing things today, man. I'm excited to see, you know, a little bit more of your time in this realm. So the leap to multifamily, you mentioned a mindset, right? And the golden handcuffs, the entrepreneur mindset, the ability to go create your own way. Share with us potentially some of the either obstacles or limiting beliefs or just the mindset you had to work through to say, you know what, I'm going to go buy a property. I'm going to go buy another one, another one, another one. And you've done that over and over again. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the challenge that a lot of us we see from society, right? We're expected to work in your job and do the things that society expects of you, right? And not to go out there and take what some people consider crazy risk, because the W-2 job is like the safe bet, right? Well, in reality, we know right now with the current situation, it may not be a safe bet and stuff. And if you don't have, if you just rely on one set of income from your W-2 job, if that suddenly ends, you can be in trouble, right? I knew I could always go and get a new job if that was the case, but I was more like, hey, what can I create? What can I go out there and create for me and my family and, you know, some sort of legacy? So that's what I wanted to do. But also, of course, you know, the limiting belief, the fear steps in, like, what if, you know, what if I make a mistake? What if the property doesn't work out? What if I don't know what I'm doing? And those are all things that we all suffer from. But in reality, the way to overcome that, those limiting beliefs, is through education. You know, once you have some competence, you start developing the confidence to go out there and do stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know people that go and will syndicate 100 units of their first deal, and great for them. I was like, oh, let me buy, you know, some smaller deals and just see how it works out. Risk my own capital and see where that goes, right? And it didn't last, you know, within the first year, I had done my first, like JV, you know, the first $1 million plus purchase and so forth. And it wasn't long before, I mean, I was like, hey, kind of let me grow here. But I just started somewhere, see how it worked out and try to understand the process and make sure I knew what was going on, really.
Yeah, all great mindsets. I love the education, confidence. It is one of those things that I preach all the time too, because I lived it. You know, I was really scared, worried, and, you know, finally get some more education. And the competence and confidence followed. So today, man, it's August 2020. We're like in this crazy pandemic and COVID, and you're leaving your job, or, you know, from full-time to part-time, going deeper into multifamily syndications. So you've obviously, you feel confident that you can have success. Some of that goes, you know, to maybe your underwriting or how you're buying the deals or how you're averting risk, right? So if you could share, you know, with our network, like some of the practices, some of the things that you're doing right now to ensure, like, you know, we're going to have success.
Yeah. You know, there's obviously, you know, if we're underwriting deals a year ago, we would look at, you know, heavy value add and how can we increase the value significantly, you know, and really give a good return to our investors. Right now, you know, I still think we can look at, is there an upside? Is there a value add component to the deal, right? Because maybe it's just been poorly managed, or just, you know, whatever the upside is, the thing that's still there. I'm a little bit more conservative around rent growth right now. So they call it, let's try to keep the rent growth, you know, very, you know, 1-2% max, instead of some of those crazy growth we have seen, right? Because the income needs to be able to support that. You know, and we want to make sure that we look at what is our break-even analysis, right? Let's say, can we survive, you know, 70% occupancy and still pay our debt, right? Because that's what's going to make or break a deal, is your ability to pay the debt, right? So that's another area I look at, you know, and maybe I'll set the expectations to the investors a little bit lower and said, hey, it could take a little bit longer here to generate these returns. It may not be a 5-year hold, maybe a 7 or 10 year hold that we're looking at right now, just to make sure we can generate that value. You know, I think, you know, 2011 was probably the best time to buy real estate, multifamily real estate. You know, right now it's maybe the second best time to buy it. I don't know. and there could be, you know, there could be certainly some opportunities coming up, but, you know, we were 6 months into this thing and we're still collecting rents just fine, right? So I'm like, well, is there a crisis coming that we're still not aware of? I don't know. And we just try to prepare and be a little bit more conservative around that.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't just shut down, you know, the globe or our US or our economy or our market or submarket, whichever market or submarket we're investing in, and people have to live somewhere and work somewhere. And we have confidence, or, you know, that feeling of, oh, well, if we're not investing in, you know, certain luxury products or luxury items or, you know, services that are being cut, it's, you know, we're investing in housing. You know, it's a basic need next to food, water, shelter. So it feels good to have our eggs in those baskets, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm glad I'm not a hotel investor.
Yes, we went to the right I went to the right seminar coaching through the program. I'm glad I didn't go to the hotel one. But we got lucky. I did. I will tell you that, you know, everything that you said there kind of makes a lot of sense, right? So for the passive investors that are listening, maybe you can give them some nuggets too. So you mentioned break-even analysis or sensitivity analysis. You mentioned value add. So still, we're still trying to push, you know, either rents up, decrease our expenses, increase NOI, but in a different way. You're not planning for as high rent growth bumps. So it's a scaled back percentage. The DSCR, debt service coverage ratio, which is the break-even analysis. How many people can we have to occupy the building, pay rents? What's the lowest number that can still pay off the loan, right? So share with maybe some passive investors, like, how do I find that? I don't know underwriting. I'm a passive investor. This is my first deal. And, you know, how do they even, like, you know, find some of this information if they're investing for their first time, you know, have some insight.
Yes, yeah, it's a very good question. You know, I've dealt with, I have had the opportunity to work with a lot of passive investors invest in my deals. And it really goes the gamut of the amount of due diligence people will do. Some they'll just like, oh, that looks good. Here's my money. And other people will ask tons of questions, right? You know, obviously as the syndicator, you have a responsibility towards your clients to say, well, hey, we've done our due diligence and our underwriting, and this is why we think it makes sense. But again, it really is the responsibility, in my opinion, of the investor to do their own due diligence and learn something about it, right? Because, you know, you're putting $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 into a deal, and you should probably do some due diligence. So if you're a passive investor and if it's your first deal, you don't want to spend hours on the phone with the syndicator, because there's probably lots of people lined up to invest with that person, so you may not have a ton of time. But do your own, like, study a little bit, listen to a few podcasts, and just learn the basic things you mentioned there. What is the, you know, break-even analysis, you know, the debt service coverage ratio. Just a few things that you can ask intelligent questions. You can say, if they haven't put it in the offering memorandum, say, what is your break-even point, right? Why are you estimating a 5% rent increase year over year, you know? You know, just some of those questions that can help you understand it a little bit, right? So it's a balance. And then, you know, you always want to look at people's track record, you know, and see how have they done in the past, and then say, how are you changing your underwriting now compared to before COVID, you know? So just ask them intelligent questions. Just don't always just trust the glossy brochures, if you will.
You mean just because it's multifamily and it's in a nice investment summary, it's not a winner?
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
I agree wholeheartedly with Jens. We created our first ebook, and it's my first attempt at putting something in writing, but it was this. I started as a passive investor as well, and, you know, just kind of have the things that you should do to go look at new deals. So that makes a lot of sense, man. Hello, hello. You're listening to the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. If you're enjoying this podcast, then I know you're serious about achieving financial freedom. Are you ready to create your own path through multifamily investing for yourself and your family? Then I know you're going to appreciate our investor's guide to multifamily investing. It's titled Tackling Commercial Real Estate the Easy Way. We use this guide to invest ourselves in $93 million worth of real estate. So we're gonna show you the basic mechanics of multifamily syndications and how to evaluate your next passive investment opportunity. So the best part, if you subscribe to our podcast now, leave us a review and a rating, I'm gonna give you a free copy of our ebook. So please take a moment to do that now. Once you've done that, go to 5tcre.com/ebook, 5tcre.com/ebook. Make sure to let us know you left a review, and we're going to send you a free copy. So thank you so much for subscribing to the Five Talents Podcast. We really appreciate it. How many deals does it take you today to, like, underwrite, to actually get one under contract that you, like, you love this deal? is, you know, are you like 5, 10, 50? Is it 100? You know, what is it like in your world and your markets today?
You know, it's interesting, right? Because, and it's, everybody's different. So the way I find deals now is really through strategic partnerships with people. So I have, you know, a partner that we've done 2 deals with, and we're working on a contract on a 3rd deal right now. But he's in a market that I really, in the upper Midwest, I like the market, but he has the local knowledge to go and find a deal of properties and deals. I don't really, you know, I'll help him with the underwriting, but we don't look at 100 deals, right? We look at a few number of deals. And then I've had the great opportunity to work with, you know, I do some coaching, and I have some students that I will partner with. So if they come and bring me a deal, you know, 50 or 100 units or 200 units that makes sense, I'll also partner with them on that. So I'm not out there. I mean, I will look at deals in certain markets, but I can usually glance at them and say, oh, you know, $90,000 a door and a rent of $600, that's not going to work. So I'm just going to pass on it, right? So, you know, I will look at a lot of deals, but I'm not like, you know, I try to, you know, once it's been promoted by the brokers and everything else, typically it's too late, right? They're just already too expensive, and it's kind of forget about it, right? So I don't have specific statistics of, you know, looking at 100 deals and make offer on one like other people do, right?
Yeah, but you've got some filters, it sounds like, in advance, qualifying opportunities that they probably look through a number. I really like the strategic partnership, you know, point you mentioned. Let's, you know, if we can, for new general partners, right? Let's say I'm invested passively. I have a few hundred doors. I kind of know the world, but I'm trying to get my first deal. That law of the first deal, so hard to get my first one. I leverage strategic partnerships for mine. What insight or you know, advice can you give to somebody that's kind of in that stage? I'm trying to get my first one, you know, my card punched here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few different ways you can approach that, right? If you're in a market that's a great market and other people want into, and you have some sort of local knowledge, like you have connections with the brokers, you're out there hustling and you can find the deals. A lot of people would love to partner with you if you can find that off-market deal or something like that, you know. So that's a way. And then you bring that deal, you know, you try to figure out who are the people that are active here, you know, oh, this and this guy has done several deals. Maybe I can approach this person with this deal. Or, you know, the way I used to do it when we still could go to in-person meetings were just going to real estate meetups and going to conferences and then meet people there and say, you know, how can I add value to you, right? And the way I did initially was through, you know, underwriting, due diligence, raising capital, you know, and that's just how I think you do it. So if you're a new guy, just figure out who are doing deals in your market and try to help them. I mean, the other way, if you can co-sponsor a deal and you can bring, you know, if you have a bunch of investors on your list and you can bring money to a deal, that's also a way to partner, you know, as long as you do other parts of that deal too, right? So there's many ways of approaching it. But just think about it, it's a team sport and you can't do a big deal by yourself, right? So that's,
yeah, man, important. I'm taking notes if you see me looking down. I wholeheartedly agree. And if you are trying to get your first deal, I would rewind what Jens just said, you know, or take some notes as well. And if you're not, you may be doing this podcast thing wrong, but he had mentioned, you know, networking, getting out there, talking to a bunch of people, letting them know, you know, that he's there. And then he led with value, right? Underwriting, due diligence, raising a little bit of capital. And those things are very valuable to somebody that's in a local market. Another thing, they may have some local expertise. I'm going to go try to find the players that are there looking to more opportunities and then try to provide them value as much as possible. So, you know, right now we're not getting together. We're not shaking hands. We're not in a big group where I can go to a RIA meeting, you know, once a month or once every couple of weeks. So what are you doing today to kind of continue this?
Yeah, it's a challenge, right? So I've gone to some virtual events, spoken with at a few of them and try to connect that way. I've continued to host like a meetup that I started. So I've been continuing to host that. I've done my own like webinars. So I've taken a topic that I was interested in and I have just gotten an expert on a Zoom call and say, you know, a lender or a broker or a property manager and just ask them questions that I wanted to ask and then add some value that way. So that's more like the thought leadership area of it, like, you know, like your podcast, whatever. But, you know, and I have been fortunate enough that I had a network kind of built up that I've then been leveraging and can continue to work with, right? So, but I can see it's a little more challenging if you're a new person trying to break into it. Yeah, I mean, try to attend virtual meetups and meet people. And if you, what I always do, like I'm on a call and I say, oh, such and such a person mentioned this, I'll write that person's name down and try to reach out to him or her afterward and say, hey, we share this common interest. We want to talk more about it. And that's a great way to connect with people as well.
Absolutely. What did you do, your role in IT? Were you on the sales side, engineering side, software side? What?
More at the engineering side. I'm, you know, database administrator, kind of the systems, the systems kind of guy, right?
Exactly. What did you do? What kind of database?
I worked in Oracle on SQL Server.
I knew you were going to say Oracle for some reason and SQL Server. But if you're not an IT guy, just you realize this engineering, DBA, Oracle takes a lot of expertise to kind of master that. And then on the Windows side, the regular SQL, you know, even that is just difficult. So the reason I ask you that is most engineers, in my 13 years, we're not extroverted sales guys, kind of like me, that felt comfortable networking. So did you have struggle, you know, trying to network, or do you still struggle with that, or overcome, you know, any of that mindset would be great.
That's an awesome question. I appreciate that, because yes, I mean, I was for years mostly most comfortable sitting in front of my computer, right? That was my comfort zone. That's where I was, had my expertise. This is where I knew what I was doing, right? But I also, you know, like people, but I felt like, you know, I would go to IT conferences, like, man, I had no common interest with any of these people. But then I would go let me step back a little bit. If you want an amazing life, if you want to change, you have to step outside your comfort zone, right? There's no question, right? Because whatever your comfort zone is, only got you as far as you are. If you want to go to the next level, you need to change. You need to grow your mindset. You need to just go and try things, right? So I realized I had to become much more extroverted, right? And the way I did it was, like, I'll go to conferences and I would go outside and speak to people in the hallway, right? Just learn, just be interested. And you don't need to be a great communicator. All you need to do is ask people questions, like, hey, where are you from? You know, what deals are you doing? What are the challenges you're having? Because people like to talk if you're asking them questions, right? And then I would say, okay, that's awesome, man. You know, so anyway, I can add some value to you, right? And connect that way. And so that was the first way. And then when I started to get, I felt like I got a little bit more experience, I would ask my mentor and said, is there a chance I can get on stage, right? Because I knew that was really going to push me to the next level. And luckily he's like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, you know, speaking in front of 500 people, I was like, oops, a little scary, but
yeah,
you know, if you don't do it, you don't know that you can do it, right? So,
yeah, that's awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think that statement, right, if you want an amazing life, you're going to have to step out, you know, of your comfort zone and get, you know, a little uncomfortable is 100% accurate. No matter what level you're at today in your professional entrepreneurship, real estate world, you're going to have to step out of what's comfortable. I love hearing that you kind of stepped out. Hey, I'd like to be on stage if I could. And now you're in front of 500 yeah. people talking, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. And let me, maybe I'll add a couple of things to that. So I also, you know, I've been on a lot of podcasts. So I also started reaching out to podcasts like, hey, let me just try to get on a podcast and see how that goes. Right. And the other thing I try to do it almost daily, at least is do Facebook Lives. So I'm like talking on the phone, on video,
yeah.
Trying to become more articulate, trying to, you know, talk about a concept, whatever, and just do stuff. It may be horrible and nobody may be listening, but at least I'm getting more comfortable speaking in front of a real audience or an imaginary audience. Right?
Yeah, those are awesome. You bring up good memories. I used to sell cars when I was younger. I sold Porsches and BMWs in Corpus Christi, but there would only be like one customer a day, you know, that would come in the first half of the morning, one customer at the end of the day. So it was like two times you got to talk to people. But I would, my boss used to always praise my work ethic because I would call all these people all morning long on the phone, past friends, connections, whoever. And I'd kind of get the engine rolling so that when somebody finally came up, I'd have that conversation. And it was like not my first conversation of the day. You know, we had multiple runs. So you stretching yourself even on Facebook Live and reaching out to podcasters, things like that, I think that's awesome. It's a stretch. That's awesome, man. Good stuff. So I have a few more questions, but I want to make sure, you know, before we wrap up, if our listeners and our viewers get some value from today, which I know they will, Jens, where should they reach out to you? What's the easiest way to get in your world?
Yeah, so they can go to opendoorscapital.com. That's my website, opendoorscapital.com. My email is Jens, J-E-N-S, at opendoorscapital.com. And if any of your listeners want to get on a free strategy call, you know, talking about investing or coaching or anything like that, they can just go to opendoorscapital.com/call and schedule a free call with me. I do that all the time. I love talking to people. Even if you're a newbie, or even if you've done some stuff, man, let's connect and let's learn from each other. I always learn something from people, and hopefully they take away a few nuggets from me as well, right?
I would absolutely take advantage of that. If you're questioning on whether or not you're going to, you know, waste this time or I'm not sure if I should, I would take advantage of that call and, you know, learn a little bit more. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to make a new friend and be able to learn a little nugget or two from the end. So, man, I encourage you to do that. Okay. So, you know, as towards the end, you know, I always have, you know, a few questions, a mindset. You brought a ton of value today. Is there anything that I haven't hit on, anything I haven't asked you about that, you know, you really, you know, just want to share, either passive investors, operators, whether they're, you know, experts or newbies, whatever, starting out, what didn't I cover that you really wanted to share today?
I think the idea that you need to go out there and have somebody, you know, hire, spend some money to further your education, if that's coaching or if it's a seminar or a program, don't be afraid to spend money because there's so much money that can be made in this property, right? Sorry, this business. And I, you know, I was a little bit kind of limiting beliefs around, I don't want to spend all this money, but it wasn't, I mean, my career was kind of like going kind of flat. And then I signed up for a coaching program and started working with these, meeting these people, and it just took off, right? So it's all about who you surround yourself with and getting the right guidance and mentorship and all that. That's really something I've learned a lot from and feel wholeheartedly is worth it. And I spend literally tens of thousands of dollars myself on coaching every year. So it's totally worth it.
Totally worth it. I am 100% in agreement. Do you mind sharing like what you talk about, what you learn from in your education programs? Is it mentoring? Is it one-on-one coaching? Is it a group setting? And what you really take from that, what you receive from that investment?
So I started with like kind of an educational program, right? To learn the basics around real estate investing, you know, how do you underwrite a deal and all those concepts around all that. So that was the basic education. And you can get that, you know, either through a course, you can get it through books, you can listen to podcasts, you can learn a lot of that stuff. But then the next step was really the group coaching I started doing and started connecting with people and getting and really starting having, you know, that higher level of education. And then I went to actually hiring my own one-on-one coach because I needed more on the mindset, more on the high performance side, because I was like, hey, I think I understand real estate investing. Where am I holding myself back as a person without realizing it? When am I not living up to my potential? What can I do by pushing myself even further, right? And my coach has helped me, you know, taking more action, getting out of my W-2 job and doing a lot of things that otherwise probably wouldn't have had the courage to go and take, do. So that's what the help I've seen.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, we have some similar backgrounds, I think, in this. Paid for education, joined like four different programs. I traveled to a bunch of cities before COVID and took as much notes and education, soaked up as much as I could, and then ended up hiring a mentor and, you know, got plugged into the network and then hired a one-on-one coach that was not specifically for real estate, but personally. So what value has that brought to you? In addition, like what you're saying, above and beyond real estate, how do you think this has changed you as an individual, as a person, and continue to grow?
I have made some significant changes over the last 6 months during, you know, a very challenging time that otherwise wouldn't have happened. So much more, I've developed my long-term vision. I know what my life is going to be like in the future, what I'm striving for, right? I know what my deep down passions are. I've connected better with my spouse. I have been more vulnerable with my friends, you know, just so much personal growth is just amazing, right? And I think really, if this whole real estate thing falls apart and I'm never going to do it again, all this new stuff I've learned, nobody can ever take that away from me. And I'm a much better person for that.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you for just being so open and a little vulnerable here and just sharing. I think that, you know, makes a lot of sense. And it's obviously driven a lot of professional value, but more importantly, like you said, relationships. At the end of this thing, it's, you know, we're going to be accountable for something, someone, whatever, but your personal relationships are, that's really your life, right? And that's why we're doing this, investing more time, more freedom, and, you know, just being able to take advantage of that today is probably, you know, priceless for you. So that's great, man. That's good stuff. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. And Jens, I really sincerely appreciate, you know, just coming on the show, sharing with our listeners, and you know, thank you very much. I'm humbled and appreciative of your time today, my friend.
Thanks, Abel. It was a lot of fun. Good luck with your podcast. I think you have a good model going here, so I'm excited to listen to more of those episodes.
That's great. And thank you. If you guys heard anything today that you really got a lot of value from, which I took at least a page of notes here, please share with Jens. Go to the Five Talents podcast and leave us a review, a positive one. Leave Jens a little bit of feedback. I'm sure he'd love to hear it. And we appreciate you guys supporting us. So share this with somebody else. I'd appreciate it. And again, my name is Abel Pacheco with the Five Talents podcast. If you have any questions about real estate investing, passive investing, you want to get some further education, coaching, you can go to our website, download some free guides or eBooks as well. And just go to this website right here, 5tcre.com, and look forward to it. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Jens. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Five Talents podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. Each week, we're going to bring you interviews from other industry experts and commercial real estate investors who followed their dreams and achieved massive success. If you enjoyed this episode, then you're going to want a copy of our Passive Investor's Guide, Tackling Commercial Real Estate the Easy Way. It's the guide we use to invest in $93 million of commercial real estate. It's a 65-page ebook. It's a great resource to learn the basic mechanics of multifamily syndications. And we're going to show you how to evaluate your next passive investment opportunity. So if you subscribe to our podcast now, leave us a review and a rating, I'm going to give you a free copy. So take a moment to do that now. We'd appreciate it. And then you can register for the book at 5tcre.com/ebook, 5tcre.com/ebook. Let us know, and we're going to send you a copy. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Five Talents podcast.